Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is portrait and event photographer Karen Haberberg. Haberberg specializes in capturing people in natural environments. She is a graduate of both the International Center for Photography as well as NYU. Her work has appeared in various New York City galleries as well as many magazines and newspapers, including Time Out New York, The Wall Street Journal, and The Huffington Post. She recently published a new book called An Ordinary Day, Kids with Rare Genetic Conditions. It contains photos and narratives of 27 truly extraordinary families and was published by Powerhouse Books. I'm speaking to Karen Haberberg by phone from her home in New York. Karen Haberberg, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, you've said that you fell in love with photography when you received your first camera at the age of 13. Tell us about that. What captured your imagination about photography?
So my uncle was actually a photographer on the side, and he gave me this manual camera, which looked at that point like a machine I never knew I would be able to use. And I think it allowed me to really view things more in depth. You know, I notice things more, and I personally don't love to be in front of the camera, so it also gave me something kind of to hide behind a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Did you start your photography journey with digital cameras, or did you start with the film age when you had to do developing? And
I am proud to say I started with the film age.
Ah.
I know it's not as appreciated, but it's really a beautiful art form. So, yeah, I used to print and develop and all of that. It was very zen.
Oh, I still think it's a great art. I had a dark room years ago, and I think it's a great, in some ways, a greater way to learn photography in many ways.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Also, with the manual camera, it is also, you know, because it's much more about light and how you capture things and how it affects the photo itself. So I thought it was great.
Yeah, and the eyes seem to have to be more trained for composition.
Yeah, well, you're not fidgeting around as much with all the dials and things. Granted, digital photography, I mean, it's amazing. It's immediate, and you can control things to the minutia. But there's something nice about the simplicity of a manual camera.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about this new book, An Ordinary Day, Kids with Rare Genetic Conditions. Where did this idea come from? Tell us how it manifested.
So I had a brother who died of a rare genetic disease called Tay-Sachs before I was born. So I always kind of had, like, I was interested in genetics, and, you know, obviously that traumatized my parents, you know, to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And more recently, my best friend who lives in LA had a child with Angelman syndrome, and just hearing her everyday struggles and what they're going through, I just felt like it's a very unpublicized event and lifestyle that needed to be shared with the community.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people, they keep people with genetic disorders hidden away. And it's great to bring them out into the real world. It makes no sense to keep people hidden.
I think it scares people, you know, typical families like mine or, you know, others just sometimes just don't know how to react. And I think that ends up ostracizing these other families.
Mm-hmm. And I would assume being able to bring these kids out into the open helps them too, right? I mean,
absolutely. I mean, first of all, it gets their story heard. And I think, you know, a lot of these families really want to tell their story and also share what they know about this particular syndrome or disease and just be recognized and raise awareness. So I was fortunate. The families I met were just amazing.
Mm-hmm. And tell us how you found the family. So I would think a lot of families would be reluctant to share this kind of thing.
I'm sure there are. You know, I'm sure there's a handful of those, not a handful, but I'm sure there are many of those as well. But fortunately, I had reached out to the Tay-Sachs Foundation because, you know, my family had been involved with them for decades. And they found me a family that was willing to be in the project. And that was my first shoot, and I'll never forget it. It changed my life. I knew at that moment I need to do this book somehow.
Hmm. Tell us about that first family.
Oh, amazing, amazing. So they had a Tay-Sachs baby named Mackenzie. I don't know how familiar you are with the disease, but children tend not to live past the age of around 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's devastating. You know, after 6 or 9 months, you basically see your child's nervous system break down and they start to go backwards in terms of their skills and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked in there, and this family was just so impressive. I mean, they were optimistic, and they were getting along great, and they were taking care of their kid and doing everything they needed to do. It was such a beautiful outlook. I just was amazed.
And they were willing to share their story, and then it sort of cascaded from there. You were able to find more families with different disorders, huh?
Well, you know, fortunately, once you sort of have images to show people, and you're they're realizing, you know, I'm in it for them. I want to do good for them. I think it was a lot easier. So I reached out to Global Genes, which represents a vast amount of different rare genetic diseases. And they put the word out, and then I just had people coming to me. It was great.
You know,
in fact, my hardest part of this whole thing was having to say no to some people just because I didn't have the finances to get to them.
So you went to all these families, you know, you like went on the road to take all these photos and find these stories.
Correct.
And did you go all over the country or mainly in the New York area?
I was in L.A. and California area for a while, and I was definitely, you know, on the East Coast. You know, unfortunately, I couldn't afford to fly, like, for one family to North Dakota or something like that. I wish that I could have, because I hate turning people down.
God, so a lot of people responded. That amazes me, that people were so willing to share stories like this.
You know, some of them feel really desperate to, like, get help or connect with other families that have kids with similar conditions. So, you know, I think that you'll do anything for your kid, right? So
yeah.
I think this is just another one of those things.
You know, when I was reading your book, I think a lot of people don't realize how easily a baby can be born with a genetic disorder. Just a tiny tweak of the DNA and a kid has a disorder that causes physical or mental problems. Isn't it amazing? You must have done some research once you found some of these families with these disorders.
Yeah, the tiniest little infliction creates havoc and basically changes your child and family's entire life. It is. It's incredibly amazing. In a way, it's amazing that, you know, we all come out, not all, but, you know, as many of us do come out okay, if you really think about it.
I know. When you were talking about some of these disorders, it was just one tiny little change of a half of a number on the DNA or a genome.
Yeah.
God, it's unbelievable to me.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention also that the doctor in your introduction said that 1 in 20 people are born with some sort of disorder. And you say maybe it's even 1 in 10.
Yeah, in the United States, according to Global Genes and different sources, about 1 in 10.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, so, I mean, in theory, you should know someone, right? One of your friends should have a child with some kind of issue, which actually happened to me more than that. But in speaking with people, they definitely said, like, oh, my friend's friend just had a baby, and they're having an issue with, you know, a genetic problem, and so it's not as rare as you think when you hear the word rare disease. What's rare is that there's so many of them. There's, I think, 7,000 rare genetic diseases. So what happens is there's like a small population in each of those, which creates a problem getting funding and different medications approved and things like that. The treatments are minimal.
Yeah, it's just because the drug companies can't make money if only 10 people out of 1,000 get this, right? I mean, that's my cynical take on it.
You're right.
Yeah. And you even covered you had some people in this book, kids in this book, that doctors had never seen anybody like him.
They don't even have a name.
Yeah, that is the part that astounds me in 2017.
And then if you think about it, what happens is then you don't really know how to even treat the symptoms because you don't know what you're dealing with.
So that must really be a challenge for those kids. Did you meet any parents that regretted having these children? I know some people have testing before the baby's born and decide to have abortions because they don't want to, you know, bring a baby that's just going to die and suffer into the world. Did you meet families like that?
I met people who were incredibly devastated when they found out, like so devastated they considered taking their older daughters and themselves into the garage and putting the car on and all going together.
Really?
Like truly just beyond, couldn't fathom this happening to them. But a lot, maybe all even, of that these families really have gotten joy from these kids. Mm-hmm. And I believe they get something that us with typical kids don't feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a temporary state, but, you know, they thought about, like, their daughters dealing with losing their brother, them dealing with it. You know, I'm sure when you first get that diagnosis, it's so overwhelming.
Yeah, so did most of these people get these diagnoses before the baby was born, or was it a total surprise?
I think maybe aside from one. No, I think all of them were diagnosed afterwards. What's super cool is, or not cool, but interesting, is one of the kids in the book was adopted, and they were adopted even though there were some issues there. Unfortunately, she then found out there were more issues, but I think that that's a pretty amazing thing to do.
Oh, yeah. God, adopt a kid. Well, so those kids are loved, though. I mean, at least you know that. They are wanted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I think all these families, they love their kids just like we do. I mean, they love them. Do they sit sometimes and wonder, why this happened to me? Yes, I would say so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or did I do something wrong to cause this? You know, mother's guilt. But I don't think that they ever feel like, you know, I wish I didn't have this child.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. You know what also astounded me? Many of these kids in your book, and many kids with genetic disorders, of course, have to go through dozens of surgeries just to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
Did the parents ever worry about putting kids through that against their will and the suffering and the pain? And that just seems so extraordinary to be 2 years old and have had 26 surgeries. It's unbelievable.
I think these families worry every minute, every day, in terms of the health of their kid. I think if they think the surgery is going to help, these parents are really major advocates for their kids, and I think they're doing what's best for them, and I think the kids know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, kids are actually more resilient from what I saw through this book than I think adults are.
I believe that, yeah.
You know, so they're doing what their parents think is best for them, and I think that the parents, you know, really do know.
Yeah. What was the process that you did for taking pictures of these kids? Did you spend a lot of time with them and just fade into the background? They obviously don't look staged.
No, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. So after, you know, I identified families or they found me, I would, you know, have a conversation with them just to explain what was going to happen and make sure they were on board. And I would send them a questionnaire just about like, you know, age of your kid, when they were diagnosed. Because I also wanted an idea of what I was going to walk into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get that nervous feeling every time I'd knock on the door when I get there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go and I'd shoot for somewhere like around half a day. And I would tell them, you know, you don't need to set anything up and I don't want you to be nervous that I'm here. And, you know, if they're having a rough day, that's okay. And, you know, I didn't want it to be stressful for them.
Mm-hmm. So you did sort of fade into the background and you weren't setting stuff up.
No, I wasn't doing that really. I mean, would I ask like, oh, is there any apparatus your kid uses? Can I see it? Yeah. But like, you know, I was really following what they were doing for that day.
Mm-hmm.
So like if they were going to swimming, you know, one of the young girls in my book has rods in her back. She has something called Marfan syndrome. She can't bend, but she loves to swim. So I was like, oh, don't cancel swimming. I'll just come to swimming. You know, I did want to just get something very authentic.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, my guest is Karen Haberberg. She's a photographer from New York, and we're talking about her incredible book, An Ordinary Day, Kids with Rare Genetic Conditions. I wanted to ask you, too, were families able to decide what kind of photos that you were going to be given permission to publish?
They did not. I mean, some of the families, you know, had asked to see them, which I was fine with, and some didn't. I did send around the interviews and stuff because I wanted to make sure the way they sounded was the way they wanted to sound.
Mm-hmm.
So the text in the book had been approved by everybody. It's a little dangerous to start sending out the photos and having people pick because then it ends up being a kind of a different book. Like I needed a balance of, you know, super happy, successful photos and, you know, realistic triumphs, failures, things like that.
Yeah, and it certainly shows. And it's called Just an Ordinary Day. That's the name of the book. You know, so it's
correct.
Not supposed to be these kids in extraordinary almost perfect, you know, positions to make people think it's different than it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you really succeeded. This is
an
amazing book, really.
I really appreciate that.
To tell us some more stories about some of the memorable kids that you met, because I'm sure these touched you deeply. You can tell by your photos.
Oh yeah, I love them all. It's hard to pick one because they're all so different.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, my best friend has a son with Angelman syndrome, and so I've spent a lot more time with her than half a day.
Tell us what that is.
So he has, I can't remember if it's a YY on one of his chromosomes or an XX instead of an XY, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like we said, it wreaks absolute havoc. So he has seizures and very, like, low-level understanding. He can't really speak. He has no sense of fear, which is incredible if you think about kids, you know, so he could, you know, jump in the pool and, you know, drown if he didn't know how to swim and do it again the next day, like no memory of that happening. You know, he throws things and breaks things, but what's amazing is he's so sweet. He's so happy and huggy and lovable. But, you know, he has sleep disorder. He doesn't sleep. You know, they're up all night. He'll hug you and then pull your hair. But these kids are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, you take the good with the bad. It's just a lot of challenging stuff, more than the typical families, you know, that you might meet. But what's cool is they also have such perspective. Like when Ethan learns to swim, it's not like like my kid learning to swim. It's like a huge, huge successful endeavor,
mm-hmm.
you know, or even some kids when they can, you know, stop eating with a feeding tube. It's huge, you know, I mean, things that we don't even think about, things that we take for granted. You know, we worry, is my kid going to go to which college? You know, they're worrying about, how's my kid going to survive when I'm not here?
Mm-hmm. You know, an issue that came to my mind while I was reading the book is do these families have insurance? How do they pay for some of this medical care? And can some of them afford caregivers? How do they navigate that?
You know, I saw a wide range of kind of, you know, an economic range between families. And they all struggle with healthcare. I mean, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of their money goes to healthcare, whether it's they lay it out and get a bunch back, or they lay it out and they don't get as much back. But, you know, it's a lot of that. And also, like, fighting with schools and getting, like, education right and
mm-hmm.
services like, you know, PT, OT and things like that I really, really do help these kids in a way that's, you know, unfathomable. I'm a big advocate these days for those kinds of services, especially when they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're all having that kind of an issue, and it's just a range of how much you can afford and how, you know, my friend Stephanie, they can't really afford any help, and it's hard. It's hard to survive like that.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah.
You know, this kid, Ethan, for example, like, you can't leave him alone for 1 second. It's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could put the stove on and, I mean, anything.
It's like living with somebody with Alzheimer's, it sounds like, yeah.
You're right, it is.
Did you find parents that actually became political advocates and tried to advocate for services and special ed and so on? Or are they
Absolutely.
Too busy with the kids to even, you know, think about that?
You know what, the kid becomes their life, so part of the advocating of them is also part of, you know, doing what's right for them. So, for example, this one family, their son has Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, and, you know, he started an organization called Jar of Hope, which is really incredible. He's raised hundreds and thousands of dollars and really gotten the word out about it and got, you know, a pharmaceutical company to do some, like, testing on mice for it and things like that.
Mm.
He also discovered, which I think is amazing, he came up with this idea that, you know, part of the issue with that disease is you have a heart that boys can have this heart problem. So he realized, he was thinking, and he realized that maybe if he put his son in one of those barometric chambers, you know, that they put people in after diving,
mm-hmm.
that it could help, and he actually secured a machine and has helped improve his son's heart processing. Uh-huh. It's amazing.
So parents are doing their own experimenting in some ways.
Hugely. I mean, the parents know more than the doctors. They know how their kids are reacting to the medicines. They know how their kids are functioning, where they're lacking, you know, so... Yeah, they truly feel like if they're not doing it, it's not getting done, and I think that they're correct.
Yeah. Well, this is certainly really a moving book. But I want to talk to you about your photography. You studied with well-known photographers like Annie Leibovitz, and I was just thinking that your style seems like the opposite of hers.
I wouldn't say I studied with her. I did. I had her come and do like a lecture series and met with her. I think her work's amazing.
But yours seems so different though, because hers seemed kind of posed, and her vision.
And you're letting people be.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is different. It's just totally different. I mean, her work is amazing. I wonder how she would shoot this book. I mean, I don't know if you've looked at any of her past work.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of her work is like her earlier stuff with her family and Susan Sontag is a bit more toward mine in terms of kind of capturing a moment.
Yeah. I know I liked her early photography. I have one of her big coffee table books from the early days, actually. But I was noticing how opposite your styles are. And I didn't know that you hadn't studied with her, but you mentioned her as someone that you worked with at one point. Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, she's doing like an online course. I just noticed like 2 days ago. I was like, I wonder if I should look at that. So it's funny you mentioned studying with her.
Yeah. Well, she's the most well-known photographer in the country, I would say at this point. You know, the other ones are Ansel Adams, but she's the one that's alive.
She is, and she's a woman, which I kind of like.
Yeah. You know what I want to talk to you about, too, real quick, is the project called About Your Father.
Oh, yeah. So my dad is a Holocaust survivor. He's still alive, but there are not that many left like him. He was like in the Warsaw Ghetto and things like that. And, basically survived in hiding and pretending that he was Polish. His father was killed, unfortunately, but he was with his mom. And I did this project to, it's a hard project to do because, you don't know my father, but my father's not the kind of guy that's going to just like tell you all his stories willingly. And, he's doesn't like to get super emotional. But I think he recognized, it's really important. And the way he tells a story and with his humor, it was just lovely. So we went to Poland and we photographed some of the places he remembered and had been. But it was not a vacation, it's depressing and heavy and, certainly the worst times in his life, I would say.
Oh yeah. But I think it's so valuable for you to be recording this kind of history. It's called Benjamin, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Benjamin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you eventually going to publish it as a book?
I haven't thought about it. I should consider it even just like a small thing just to have and, he's getting older too. It would be nice for him to see it.
Yeah, I thought that was a really important project that you're doing. I'm so glad he allowed you to take part in some of his memories. That's quite amazing.
The stories are amazing too. Just what I'm sure many people went through, but his are the ones that I heard specifically, and just in terms of how they survived and pretending they were Polish, and he was an altar boy, and one day they were in the church, and my father was hungry, he was always hungry then, and there was no food in Poland, and so he was making noise, and my grandmother was nervous that they would, call attention to him, so she took him out of the church to the potato field to see if he could find a potato field, and then as they look up, the church was bombed.
Oh, my God.
And just three... He told me it's like one of his first memories, three or four people walked out like black, like in soot, and then just collapsed.
Wow.
And they were the only ones that survived.
Wow. Yeah, well, I'm so glad you're recording this. Honestly, Karen, it's very important to have this kind of information, I think.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, you co-founded an organization called Media Pros for media professionals in New York. Tell us about it.
I did. It was my master's project, would you believe?
Yeah.
So it was back when people weren't as in touch with, you know, social media and stuff. It was before Facebook, for example.
Mm.
I had come up with this idea that it would be great to get media professionals, I just thought at the time, in New York on like a listserv.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just like grew and grew. And all of a sudden I looked and it had like 800 members. I was like, oh, that's really cool.
And what's the mission?
The mission at the time, or when I started it, was to share resources, like where do I get this prop, or do you know anyone who can shoot in Wyoming, or, you know, that kind of a thing. So just to help with people's projects that they're hired for. And then it just became kind of like a sharing of information, like, did you see this, or, you know, someone's looking for a PA, or, you know, that kind of a thing. Now it's on Facebook, obviously, but it's not as active because I feel like so many people are so connected already.
Yeah. You know, everybody's doing blogs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? We're almost out of time, but I just want to ask you really quickly, and this is a fraught time for all people in journalism and media. Are you worried about the fake news aspect of photography and the doctored and photoshopped? And is Media Pros and any of the people in your networks, are they talking about these issues?
I think we're worried definitely about the authenticity of things, especially given our political climate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really what bothers my kind of cohort, you know, and just in terms of like funding for the arts and things like that are really tentative right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knows what will be.
Yeah, but, you know, people think about fake news, and I also think about how photos can be doctored, and people are using photos as fake news, and it's just so amazing out there to try to find the truth, right?
I mean, even on a low, low, low level, like, they could take, you know, your kid's face and put it on some naked body and put it on Instagram and, you know, ruin her high school career. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's, like, every level.
I know, I know.
So, I think the thing is that we're scared of so many bigger things in our society right now in this realm that's fallen a little bit behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To like what's going to be in the bigger sense of journalism and art.
Yeah, yeah. But the search for the truth is our main goal, is what I would say as a simplified way of looking
at that. I like that.
Okay, Karen Haberberg, we're almost out of time. Can you give some contact information, your website perhaps?
Sure. So my website's karenhaberberg.com, KarenHaberberg.com. And you can buy my book on Amazon if you'd like.
Great. Well, Karen Haberberg, thank you so much for joining us.
Again, thank you.
I've been talking to photographer Karen Haberberg, and her book is An Ordinary Day, Kids with Rare Genetic Conditions. Thank you so much, Karen. Good luck in the future.
Thanks so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.